Welcome to the Daily Radio Bible. My name is Ken McDonald from Three Hills, Alberta, Canada. Today is Monday, April 24th, and we are reading through the Bible.
Thank you, Ken, and a big welcome to all my friends there in Western Canada. And a big welcome to you, too, no matter where it is you're coming from today. My name is Hunter, and we are reading through the Bible. That's what we do every day. We take a little time in God's Word. We let God's Word take a little time on us. And oh, how we need that. No doubt about that. Each and every day we spend a little time in this Bible of ours. And each and every day we are confronted with God's grace, with God's kindness, with God's truth. I'm so glad for it. Well, hey, today we are in the book of 1 Samuel, chapters 28 and 29, then we go on to Psalm 109, and then we finish up in Matthew's Gospel, chapter 11. We're reading through the New Living Translation. What do you say we all just jump right on in here? 1 Samuel, chapter 28. Saul consults with a medium. About that time, the Philistines mustered their armies for another war with Israel. King Achish told David, "You and your men will be expected to join me in battle." "Very well," David agreed. "Now you will see for yourself what we can do." Then Achish told David, "I will make you my personal bodyguard for life." Meanwhile, Samuel had died and all Israel had mourned for him. He was buried in Ramah, his hometown. And Saul had banned from the land of Israel all mediums and those who consult with the spirits of the dead. The Philistines set up their camp at Shunem, and Saul gathered all the army of Israel and camped at Gilboa. When Saul saw the vast Philistine army, he became frantic with fear. He asked the Lord what he should do, but the Lord refused to answer him, either by dreams or by sacred lots or by the prophets. Saul then said to his advisors, "Find a woman who is a medium, so I can go and ask her what to do." His advisors replied, "There is a medium at Endor." So Saul disguised himself by wearing ordinary clothing instead of his royal robes. Then he went to the woman's home at night, accompanied by two of his men. "I have to talk to a man who has died," he said. "Will you help call up his spirit for me?" "Are you trying to get me killed?" the woman demanded. "You know that Saul has outlawed all the mediums and all who consult the spirits of the dead. Why are you setting a trap for me?" But Saul took an oath in the name of the Lord and promised, "As surely as the Lord lives, nothing bad will happen to you for doing this." Finally, the woman said, "Well, whose spirit do you want me to call up?" "Call up Samuel," Saul replied. When the woman saw Samuel, she screamed, "You've deceived me! You are Saul!" "Don't be afraid," the king told her. "What do you see?" "I see a god coming up out of the earth," she said. "What does he look like?" Saul asked. "He's an old man wrapped in a robe," she replied. Saul realized it was Samuel, and he fell to the ground before him. "Why have you disturbed me by calling me back?" Samuel asked Saul. "Because I'm in deep trouble," Saul replied. "The Philistines are at war with me, and God has left me and won't reply to the prophets or dreams. So I have called for you to tell me what to do." So Samuel replied, "Why ask me, since the Lord has left you and has become your enemy? The Lord has done just as he said he would do. He has torn the kingdom from you and given it to your rival David. The Lord has done this to you today because you refused to carry out his fierce anger against the Amalekites. What's more, the Lord will hand you and the army of Israel over to the Philistines tomorrow, and you and your sons will be here with me. The Lord will bring down the entire army of Israel in defeat." Saul fell full length on the ground, paralyzed with fright because of Samuel's words. He was also faint with hunger, for he had not eaten all day and all night. When the woman saw how distraught he was, she said, "Sir, I obeyed your commands at the risk of my life. Now do what I say, and let me give you a little something to eat so you can regain your strength for the trip back." But Saul refused to eat anything. Then his advisors joined the woman in urging him to eat, so he finally yielded and got up from the ground and sat on the couch. The woman had been fattening a calf, so she hurried out and killed it. She took some flour, kneaded it into dough, and baked unleavened bread. She brought the meal to Saul and his advisors, and they ate it. Then they went out into the night. 1 Samuel 29. The Philistines reject David. The entire Philistine army now mobilized at Aphek, and the Israelites camped at the spring of Jezreel. As the Philistine rulers were leading out their troops in groups of hundreds and thousands, David and his men marched at the rear with King Achish. But the Philistine commanders demanded, "What are these Hebrews doing here?" And Achish told them, "This is David, the servant of King Saul of Israel. He's been with me for years, and I've never found a single fault in him from the day he arrived until today." But the Philistine commanders were angry. "Send him back to the towns we've given him," they demanded. "He can't go into the battle with us. What if he turns against us in battle and becomes our adversary? Is there any better way for him to reconcile himself with his master than by handing our heads over to him? Isn't this the same David about whom the women of Israel sing in their dances? Saul has killed his thousands and David his tens of thousands." So Achish finally summoned David and said to him, "I swear by the Lord that you have been a trustworthy ally. I think you should go with me into battle, for I've never found a single flaw in you from the day you arrived until today. But the other Philistine rulers won't hear of it. Please don't upset them, but go back quietly." "What have I done to deserve this treatment?" David demanded. "What have you ever found in your servant that I can't go and fight the enemies of my lord the king?" But Achish insisted, "As far as I'm concerned, you're as perfect as any angel of God, but the Philistine commanders are afraid to have you with them in battle. Now get up early in the morning and leave with your men as soon as it gets light." So David and his men headed back into the land of the Philistines, while the Philistine army went out to Jezreel. Psalm 109. For the choir director, a psalm of David. O God, whom I praise, don't stand silent and aloof while the wicked slander me and tell lies about me. They surround me with hateful words and fight against me for no reason. I love them, but they try to destroy me with accusations, even as I'm praying for them. They repay evil for good and hatred for my love. They say, "Get an evil person to turn against him. Send an accuser to bring him to trial. When his case comes up for judgment, let him be pronounced guilty. Count his prayers as sins. Let his years be few. Let someone else take his position. May his children become fatherless and his wife a widow. May his children wander as beggars and be driven from their ruined homes. May creditors seize his entire estate and strangers take all he has earned. Let no one be kind to him and let no one pity his fatherless children. May all his offspring die. May his family name be blotted out in the next generation. May the Lord never forget the sins of his fathers. May his mother's sins never be erased from the record. May the Lord always remember these sins, and may his name disappear from human memory, for he refused all kindness to others. He persecuted the poor and needy. He hounded the brokenhearted to death. He loved to curse others. Now you curse him. He never blessed others. Now don't you bless him. Cursing is as natural to him as clothing, or the water he drinks, or the rich food he eats. Now may his curses return and cling to him like clothing. May they be tied around him like a belt. May those curses become the Lord's punishment for my accusers who speak evil of me. But deal well with me, O Sovereign Lord, for the sake of your own reputation. Rescue me because you are so faithful and good. For I am poor and needy, and my heart is full of pain. I'm fading like a shadow at dusk. I'm brushed off like a locust. My knees are weak from fasting, and I'm skin and bones. I'm a joke to people everywhere. When they see me, they shake their heads in scorn. Help me, O Lord my God. Save me because of your unfailing love. Let them see that this is your doing, that you yourself have done it, Lord. Then let them curse me if they like, but you will bless me. When they attack me, they will be disgraced, but I, your servant, will go right on rejoicing. May my accusers be clothed with disgrace. May their humiliation cover them like a cloak, but I will give repeated thanks to the Lord, praising him to everyone, for he stands beside the needy, ready to save them from those who condemn them." Matthew chapter 11. Jesus and John the Baptist. When Jesus had finished giving these instructions to the 12 disciples, he went out to teach and preach in towns throughout the region. John the Baptist, who was in prison, heard about all the things the Messiah was doing. So he sent his disciples to ask Jesus, "Are you the Messiah we've been expecting, or should we keep looking for someone else?" Jesus told them, "Go back to John and tell him what you have heard and seen. The blind see, the lame walk, those with leprosy are cured, the deaf hear, the dead are raised to life, and the good news is being preached to the poor." And he added, "God blesses those who do not fall away because of me." As John's disciples were leaving, Jesus began talking about him to the crowds. "What kind of man did you go into the wilderness to see? Was he a weak reed swayed by every breath of wind? Or were you expecting to see a man dressed in expensive clothes? No, people with expensive clothes live in palaces. Were you looking for a prophet? Yes, and he is more than a prophet. John is the man to whom the scriptures refer when they say, 'Look, I'm sending my messenger ahead of you, and he will prepare your way before you.' I tell you the truth, of all who have ever lived, none is greater than John the Baptist. Yet even the least person in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he is. And from the time John the Baptist began preaching until now, the kingdom of heaven has been forcibly advancing, and violent people are attacking it. For before John came, all the prophets in the law of Moses looked forward to this present time. And if you are willing to accept what I say, he is Elijah, the one the prophet said would come. Anyone with ears to hear should listen and understand. To what can I compare this generation? It is like children playing a game in the public square. They complain to their friends, 'We played wedding songs and you didn't dance, and we played funeral songs and you wouldn't mourn. For John didn't spend his time eating and drinking, and you say he's possessed by a demon. The Son of Man, on the other hand, feasts and drinks, and you say he's a glutton and a drunkard and a friend to tax collectors and other sinners. But wisdom is shown to be right by its results.'" Then Jesus began to denounce the towns where he had done so many of his miracles because they hadn't repented of their sins and turned to God. "What sorrow awaits you, Chorazin and Bethsaida? For if the miracles I did in you had been done in wicked Tyre and Sidon, their people would have repented of their sins long ago, clothing themselves in burlap and throwing ashes on their heads to show their remorse. I tell you, Tyre and Sidon will be better off on judgment day than you. And you people of Capernaum, will you be honored in heaven? No, you will go down to the place of the dead. For if the miracles I did for you had been done in wicked Sodom, it would still be here today. I tell you, even Sodom will be better off on judgment day than you." At that time, Jesus prayed this prayer. "O Father, Lord of heaven and earth, thank you for hiding these things from those who think themselves wise and clever, and for revealing them to the childlike. Yes, Father, it pleased you to do it this way. My Father has entrusted everything to me. No one truly knows the Son except the Father, and no one truly knows the Father except the Son and those to whom the Son chooses to reveal him." Then Jesus said, "Come to me, all you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Let me teach you, because I'm humble and gentle at heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy to bear, and the burden I give you is light." May God add his blessing to the reading of his word. Amen. What do you do when it seems that God is inattentive to your circumstances? When God seems quiet, uninvolved, are you tempted to lose faith? Are you tempted to doubt, to shut down, walk away, try and go it alone? Well, John the Baptist seems to be right there with you. He's in prison right now and his circumstances aren't looking real good. It won't be long before he's executed. I'm not sure John had this in mind when he went out into the desert and began this work that God called him to. He was supposed to be the forerunner, the prophet who would go out into the wilderness to prepare the way for the Lord's coming, for God's Messiah to show up. He was pretty clear on this, but what he was going through at this moment, In this chapter, well, I'm not sure he was real clear on it. He was in prison awaiting his death, and he sends some of his disciples to go and ask Jesus a question. Because John's vision about his place in this whole story of God is starting to get a little cloudy for him. He wants some clarity. Because to John, it seems like God is inattentive to his circumstances. When it doesn't seem like God's coming through for you the way you thought he would come through for you, well, then you're tempted to doubt, to question. And you can't blame John for that, so he sent some of his servants to go ask Jesus, "What's up? Are you the guy I thought you would be, or do I need to keep looking for someone else?" Now notice what he doesn't tell him. He doesn't tell him, "Yeah, I'm the guy. Go tell John I got this thing. I'm going to break you out by noon. You're good to go." No, that's not what he tells John. But this is what he tells him. He says, "Go back and report what you hear and what you see." Because John can't seem to see past his circumstances. He can't see past his prison walls. John's pain and perhaps his disappointment in God's seeming inactivity in his life has shrunk his vision down to the size of his prison cell. So Jesus wants John to see something beyond the walls of his prison. So he tells John's friends, "You tell him what you see and what you hear, because I want my friend John to see beyond his circumstances. You go and tell him that the blind receive sight, the lame walk, and those who have leprosy are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is proclaimed to the poor." And then he says this, "Blessed is anyone who does not stumble on account of me." In other words, you hang in there, John. Your personal circumstances don't necessarily coincide with how God feels about you. Don't let your faith hinge on what God has or hasn't done for you lately. And when your prison walls begin to shrink in on you, and your vision matches the dimensions of your prison walls, then you remember this message: that the blind see, the deaf hear, the lame walk, the dead are raised, that good news is preached to the poor. You remember this good news, this gospel, that God is at work, that God is not inattentive, he's not neglectful. No, he's working all things out for the good of those who love him and are called according to his purposes. Even you, John, even you in your current circumstances, I am there for you now. Blessed are you. That word blessed means I'm present with you, John. I haven't left you. I'm not inattentive. I'm not neglecting you. You keep your eyes on me, and I'm going to work everything out. Well, that's the prayer from my own heart today, my friend. That when circumstances come crashing in, and I begin to lose my vision, and my vision shrinks down to the size of my current circumstances, I want to remember this. I want to be strengthened by this gospel. I want to remember that Jesus is not inattentive, that he's got his eye on me. That's a prayer that I have for my own heart. That's a prayer I have for my family too, for my wife, my daughters, my son. And that's a prayer I have for you. Well, dailyradiobible.com, that's where we hang our hat out here in the interwebs, and it is always such a cool thing to hear from you, to find out a little bit about you, who you are, where you're from, how you stumbled upon this podcast. So next time you got a moment, take it and let a body know. It'll bless you, and it will certainly bless me. No doubt about that. Hey, before I let you go, I want to send a shout out to a few folks out there. Some folks that have been joining us on Facebook. To Dan Morris. and to Brenda Davis, to Craig Grierson, and to Jane Weyerhaeuser Johnson, and once again to my friend Ken McDonald and all the folks up there in Three Hills, Alberta, Canada. And to everyone out there, no matter where you're from, whether it's Three Hills or Seattle, Washington, Flemington, New Jersey, it doesn't matter to me. And I tell you, I'm just honored to have you along on this journey. Well, hey, my friends, we have done it again. We have spent another day in the Bible, and I plan on being back here again tomorrow to do the same thing. Lord willing, and the creek don't rise, I fully intend to be here at this makeshift office here in the basement of my house in Cincinnati, Ohio. Until that time, let's go forward in God's joy. Let's let His joy be our strength. And let's remember this, that we are loved. No doubt about it. All right, I'll talk to you again tomorrow. You guys take care. Bye-bye.